My name is Annina Koivu. I'm the curator of the Tehras exhibition this year, Onoma's summer exhibition. And what might be interesting for you also to know, I'm Finnish, but I grew up abroad. So even if I studied architecture in Finland, this is actually my first time working and doing a project in Finland. So it's personally very exciting. So I was very happy when Onomos invited me to curate this exhibition. And in the very first meeting, it also became clear that we want to do a topic which is, of course, very related to Fiskars, but slightly provocative as well. So for those who are not from Fiskars and are listening, what's important to know is that Fiskars, of course, used to be a large town, or a town based on a large industry and factory. And then when the factory of Fiskars started to die out, the village was facing ruin. People were leaving. So then this beautiful idea came about that craftsmen and designers could actually save the town. And now, after how many years is it? If that happened maybe in the middle 80s, let's say 25 years later, more or less, 30 years later, the situation is blossoming. So I think, if I remember well, there are now 120 members to Onoma, which are keeping this town alive and striving, and more visitors are coming in. And of course, this exhibition, which is, I think, again, in its 25th year, has done a great deal to it. So why did we want to provoke? Because, of course, we could have easily made a beautiful exhibition about craftsmanship. But I firmly believe that craftsmanship exists on many different levels. It exists on the small-scale workshop, the one-man workshop even, the bodega, but it does exist also on large-scale manufacturing, especially in the design industry. It is not only in a small scale. So in order maybe to remind makers that a factory is not the enemy that needs to be fought, we should consider how craftsmanship exists on all the different layers and levels of design production. So that's why we chose to call it factory and not crafts, in order to kind of get away of this romantic notion of somebody, a bearded man carving a wooden piece by the fireplace with all the time in the world to finish one-off piece. And in the exhibition, we tried to tell stories. There are about 45 different stories. The stories speak about the people who make these objects, the places where they come from, and the processes. Processes go from handwork all the way to latest 3D printing and robotics. Again, trying to remind that on all these levels, craftsmen are involved. Of course, in a traditional sense, where traditional heritage and making processes are preserved, but it takes an excellent craftsman to run a CNC machine. You need to be a specialist in your field. So what we try to remind as well is that a craftsman at the end can be found on basically in any profession, on any scale. It means that you have the right attitude for high quality work. So as I said, we have about 45 different stories, projects. Each one speaks of a different way of making, of collaborating, or a different idea person behind it. So there are tinkerers, scientists, carpenters, weavers, ceramists, glassblowers. So we do cover, I think, a very large group of makers. It's not half-half, but almost half of the projects are from Onoma members, and the others are by invited guests. And it was actually a wish to invite international makers. So at some point it did feel a bit, let's say wrong to neglect Finnish designers as well, but we thought that we do it radically rather than trying to compromise, because at some point then you start inviting people from the Finnish design scene, but you wouldn't invite all of them. So at some point we decided it's a nice kind of mix to have local and international. So that might make it also a stronger dialogue in some way. The process, how we got to the Onoma projects is, if I understand well, the way it has been done for many years already, that members hand in a proposal at some point in autumn, we meet up, we go through the proposals and check which of these proposals are closest to the idea of or the theme of the exhibition we want to achieve. And of course, diversity is also important in that sense. So diversity means that, of course, we have plenty of woodworkers, because after all, that is also quite specific to Fiskars at this point. But there's also Karin Wittnes and her ceramic work. We have Peter Nykop doing dolls, which was quite a curious choice as well, because, of course, you would not probably call it a factory, what Peter is doing, because it's very close to craft work and artistic work. But in her process, she uses, for example, plaster molds, which are being used in a high-end or large-scale plants and factory as well. So on a small scale, processes can be quite similar, especially for the first part of her doll making, until she then starts personalizing them and turning them into a more artistic work. Among the Onoma projects, there may be two looking at the black hole right now that are worth talking about. It's Minja Kolehmainen, whose work is actually called I Am Not a Factory. So what she did, that she shows the five main steps in the work of a carpenter or a cabinet maker to arrive to a final stool. But not only showing or illustrating the process of how you arrive to the final project, she also wrote down the time she spends on each step and the cost it takes, in order to kind of illustrate that handwork has a price. So the other project that's interesting to look at is by Kaksikko Studio, who are based both in Fiskars and Helsinki, by Wesley Waters and Salla Luhtasela, who it's actually the final work, graduation work by Wesley. There are three chairs, and the three chairs show different ways of production. So you can see hand carving, you can see machine work, and you can see CNC work. And what I find quite interesting for the visitor to spot, if there's a difference, maybe not, what it means to use different processes. Of course, a cabinet maker would always say that handwork has a soul. But then again, you know, at this point, the visitor can actually check for himself or herself and, you know, discover, is there a soul, or is it okay to spend, for example, less to have more pieces serialized, produced in a serialized way, and maybe give up on a little bit of soul? I think that's quite intriguing to look at. As we're standing in a black hole, what is an interesting mix is that when you step in, you see an aluminum guitar, which was actually designed for Lou Reed. And having musical instruments here is quite fascinating, because it's a highly handcrafted work. It's very difficult to make instruments by machine. Yet, it's a guitar maker from Milan. They actually CNC cut the aluminum shell of the guitar. And with the machine, they are allowed to arrive to certain acoustical elements and details, which are very hard to achieve doing aluminum guitars by hand. So they're, you know, they're pushing actually the quality of an instrument further, thanks to the involvement of new machines, which shouldn't be underestimated either, because I do believe the craftsmen are the first people to involve new tools when it actually helps them to make a better work. So that fits very nicely the theme of the exhibition as well. There are two pieces which I'm very happy about, and it's going to be fun to see how visitors perceive it. In one corner, you have a window and a wall element. I am sure people will wonder if we forgot this piece here, because it looks like it's part of the building or of another building that was deconstructed. But actually, it's a wall panel by Jean Prouvé, who was a blacksmith, a self-taught architect, and a producer of furniture pieces. And what was really important about his way of working, he never really did one final piece. So there's a very famous standard chair, which is now produced by Vidra, which exists in hundreds of versions. He kept on improving the chair. with the means he had and new ideas he had. So the idea also of serialized production means it is repetitive, but you can also change it in a process and improve it. So it doesn't need to stick to the origin or the very first model, so to say, being the origin. And we could argue what is origin and what not. So we have this wall panel, which is from a prefabricated house he created in France. And you can, if you know a little bit more of Jean Prouvé's work, in this wall panel you can see elements that he uses in his other architecture that he uses also in his furniture design. So it becomes like a total design. So that is also important to remember, what I do believe craftsmen always think about. It's not only the one detail, it needs to be the whole as a good project. And opposite to the wall panel, we have three lights by Gino Sarfatti, also one of the heroes of modern design from Italy. Galerie Criot from Paris kindly loaned them to us because they're collector's pieces. Like the wall panel by itself is also a collector's piece. These lights represent the work of Gino Sarfatti and Arte Luce, the company for lighting he founded. If I remember well, he designed more than 800 different light projects. Again, with the idea that, you know, you have to invent new things. There's a problem, you solve the problem. So a project is never good enough, you just keep on going. So he created a beautiful catalogue of lighting pieces. And only light. He never did anything else. It was only light. So it shows also this obsession of a craftsman. Even though he never made them himself. He actually studied aeronautics, was an engineer, founded a company in lighting, but then had a group of craftsmen to, of course, produce these pieces. But the attitude is always what counts in all of this. One more piece in the black hole. It is a wooden bench for the entrance. So it actually has a lid, and underneath the lid, the seat has a lid, and underneath the lid you can place things. It's quite a classical, traditional bench for the entrance. The piece in itself, let's say, doesn't shout out any kind of particular way of producing or material choice or detailing or something like that. What is important is the panel that's hanging next to it. It is the world's first economic nutrition label. So we are used to nutrition labels for food because we want to know what the ingredients are. We want to know how much fat is in something, how much sugar and all kinds of chemistry is involved in a chocolate bar, for example. But we never know where the money goes when you buy a furniture piece, for example. Or even, you know, if you go to a hotel or you go to a business, you don't know how the money is being divided. There's a foundation in Newfoundland in Canada, on Fogo Island, where Zita Kopp, the founder of Schofers Foundation and the creator of the economic nutrition label, decided that she wants to change this by creating new work on an island which is facing, or was facing, a bit similar problems than Fiskars 30 years ago, that people were leaving because the fish industry was dying out. She decided to create new work, but because it's a foundation, they're transparent. So it's for the first time actually a business which is transparent and telling you that that's the cost of material, that's the cost of employment, that's the win, so to say. I thought it's very important to tell that story also in this context, because it might hopefully provoke some ideas also for Fiskars how to move forward. Because right now, Fiskars is thriving and blossoming, but we can also see that tourists come in, and when tourists come in, of course you start to maybe want to feed the needs of the tourists rather than keep to the qualities of your own work. And this way of kind of creating a community which is transparent and where the economics are divided maybe in a new way, or at least shown where they go transparently as a collective also, might be an interesting future of how Fiskars can become a kind of creative factory in a positive sense again.